A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about how you deliberately shape the data going into a vector database when you're building a serious memory layer for personalized AI at scale. His core point is that there's this misconception out there that vector data is just a flat blob you can't structure once it's embedded. Just pick a good embedding model and dump everything in. But he says that's wrong. You actually have a lot of architectural levers. Separate indexes, namespaces, document type partitioning, and rich metadata schemas tailored to each document type. He wants a walkthrough of when to split into separate indexes versus namespaces, when to partition by document type, how to design metadata schemas that actually do real work during hybrid retrieval, and how this kind of thinking differs from SQ. L-style schema design, even though it borrows some of the same instincts.
This is the conversation I've been waiting to have, because the just dump it in advice is everywhere, and it leads to genuinely terrible retrieval at scale. Also, quick production note, today's script is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if anything comes out particularly elegant, credit where it's due.
So, let's start with the core instinct Daniel's pushing against. Someone spins up Pinecone, picks an embedding model, chunks their documents, and hits ingest. 6 months later, they've got 10 million vectors, and their recall at top K is basically a coin flip. They blame the embedding model. It's rarely the embedding model.
It's almost never the embedding model. The problem is that semantic similarity alone is a blunt instrument when you're asking a question like, what did I say about database indexing in that meeting with the infra team last March? That query has at least four filtering dimensions: topic, document type, temporal window, and entity, and none of them live in the vector itself unless you put them there architecturally.
This is where the schemaless marketing around vector databases becomes misleading. Pinecone's documentation doesn't call itself schemaless, to be fair, but the developer experience of just send vectors with some optional metadata creates that impression. Daniel's framing it as retrieval accuracy through deliberate shape. I like that.
Let's build this from the ground up. The first question you hit when designing a memory layer for a personal AI is one index or many.
And my instinct, and I think the instinct of anyone coming from a relational database background, is to reach for separate indexes the way you'd reach for separate tables. Keep your meeting notes in one index, your code snippets in another, your personal facts in a third. Clean separation, no cross-contamination.
That instinct is wrong more often than it's right. Pinecone indexes are built independently. Each index has its own pod or serverless compute, its own replication, its own cost floor. If you spin up 5 indexes and 3 of them have 50,000 vectors while one has 8 million, you're paying for 5 separate infrastructure footprints. You're also losing the ability to do cross-domain semantic search. Find anything related to authentication. Should span meeting notes, code snippets, and documentation. Not require 5 separate queries you then have to merge and re-rank yourself.
When does a separate index actually make sense?
First, when you have different latency requirements. If your personal facts index needs to return results in under 50 milliseconds because it's powering a real-time agent loop, but your archival email index can tolerate 300 milliseconds, those belong in different indexes with different hardware profiles. Second, when you have different availability requirements or data sensitivity levels, if one dataset needs full isolation for compliance reasons, separate index, no question. And third, when the embedding model itself is different. If you're using one model for code and another for natural language, those vectors live in different dimensional spaces and physically cannot coexist in the same index.
That third one is the obvious constraint people miss. Pinecone requires a fixed dimension for all vectors in an index. You can't mix 768-dimension vectors with 1536-dimension vectors. If you're using different embedding models for different content types, which you probably should be for code versus prose. That forces your hand on index separation.
But for everything else, you use namespaces within a single index. A namespace in Pinecone is essentially a logical partition. All vectors share the same physical infrastructure, the same pod, the same billing, but queries can be scoped to a specific namespace. You get query isolation without infrastructure isolation.
The cost argument here is real. Pinecone's standard pricing for a P1 pod runs around $70 a month. If you split into 5 indexes, you're paying $350 a month before you've stored a single vector. If you use one index with 5 namespaces, it's $70.
The performance difference for namespace scoped queries is negligible. Pinecone's metadata filtering, including namespace filtering, happens in a pre-filtering step. The query vector is compared only against vectors that pass the filter. So scoping to a namespace actually reduces the candidate set before any distance calculations happen. It's faster, not slower, than searching the whole index.
The rule of thumb is, one index per embedding dimension. Use namespaces for logical separation, and only spin up a separate index when you have a hard latency, isolation, or compliance boundary that justifies the cost.
That's the first layer. Now let's talk about document type partitioning and metadata schemas, where things get interesting.
This is the part where relational database instincts actually do transfer usefully. Let me play the skeptic. If I'm designing a metadata schema for a vector database, aren't I just reinventing SQL? I'm adding structured fields. I'm filtering on them. I'm effectively doing a where clause before my semantic search. Why not just use Postgres with pgvector and call it a day?
This gets at the fundamental paradigm difference. In SQL, the query is defined by the structure. You say, give me rows where meeting date is in March 2025, and the participant is the infra team. The structure filters first, and you get back exactly those rows. In a vector database with hybrid retrieval, the metadata filter narrows the candidate set, but the ranking is still determined by vector similarity. The structure prunes the haystack, but the needle is found by meaning, not by a keyword match.
It's the difference between show me all meetings from March, ASQLL, query, and show me things semantically similar to database indexing discussion, but only within the subset of documents that are meetings from March. The metadata constrains the search space, but similarity determines what rises to the top.
And that distinction matters enormously when designing the metadata schema. In SQL, you index columns you frequently query on. In a vector database, you add metadata fields that narrow the candidate set before semantic search runs. The goal isn't to describe the document exhaustively. It's to add the minimum set of structured fields that eliminate the most common false positives.
Give me a concrete example.
Let's take a meeting note. The raw text might be a transcript or bullet points. The embedding captures the semantic content, but without metadata, a query like, "What did we decide about the API section? Rate limiting last month?" returns every semantically similar conversation about rate limiting you've ever had, including ones from 2 years ago and completely different contexts.
Right, because API rate limiting is semantically similar to API rate limiting regardless of when it happened.
Your metadata schema for a meeting note needs, at minimum, a document type field, literally meeting note, a date field, and a participants field, probably as an array of strings. With those three fields, your hybrid query becomes filter to document type equals meeting note, filter to date range last 30 days, filter to participants contains infra team, then run semantic search for API. Rate limiting decision. Suddenly, your recall at top 5 goes from useless to nearly perfect.
You can get more granular. If your meeting notes have explicit sections, decisions made, action items, open questions, you could chunk at the section level and add a section type metadata field. Then a query for what action items did I commit to last week filters to section type equals action items and date within 7 days. The semantic search barely has to work.
That's the power move. And you can't retroactively add section level chunking to 10 million vectors without re-indexing everything. You have to decide your chunking strategy and metadata schema before you start ingesting at scale.
Let's contrast with a code snippet schema.
Completely different fields. For a code snippet, you want document type equals code snippet, a language field, a repository field, a file path, and probably a tags array for things like authentication, database, middleware. The date save matters less than for a meeting note. The key insight is that the useful filtering fields are different per document type, and you should not try to create a universal schema that covers everything.
This is the mistake I see constantly. Someone designs a single metadata schema with 30 fields, document type, date, author, source, tags, language, participants, project, priority, status. Then, for any given document, 25 of those fields are null. It's a sparse schema that creates indexing overhead and doesn't actually help retrieval because the meaningful filtering dimensions differ per document type.
Null fields in Pinecone metadata still consume storage and get evaluated during filtering. There's a performance cost to over-schematizing. The better approach is per-document type schemas, where each document type gets exactly the fields that matter for its retrieval patterns and nothing else.
How do you implement per-document type schemas when all vectors live in the same index? Pinecone doesn't enforce a schema. Metadata is just a JSON object per vector.
You enforce it at the application level. Your ingestion pipeline has a document classifier that routes each document to a type-specific chunking and metadata extraction step. A meeting note goes through a pipeline that extracts date, participants, and sections. A code snippet goes through a pipeline that extracts language, repository, and file path. A personal fact goes through a pipeline that extracts the entity, the attribute, and a confidence score. Each pipeline produces vectors with the metadata fields appropriate to that type.
Then, at query time, your retrieval layer needs to know which metadata fields are available for which document types. You can't filter on participants if the query might also need to search code snippets that don't have that field.
This is where the query router comes in, and it's the part most people skip. Before you hit the vector database, you need a lightweight classification step that determines what kind of query this is. What did we discuss in the infra meeting? Is clearly a meeting note query. Route it to the meeting note namespace with meeting note metadata filters. Show me how I implemented JWT. Validation is a code snippet query. Route it to the code namespace with language and repository filters. The query router doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be good enough to apply the right metadata constraints.
If the query is ambiguous, tell me about authentication. You run it against multiple namespaces with different metadata filters and merge the results. The parallel approach almost always gives better results at the cost of slightly higher latency. But we're talking about a personal AI memory layer, not a real-time ad-serving system. An extra 100 milliseconds to run 3 parallel queries with proper filtering is worth it.
Let's dig into the hybrid filtering mechanics. Pinecone's metadata filtering uses a pre-filtering approach by default. The filter is applied first, reducing the candidate set, and then the vector search runs on the remaining vectors. That works great when your filter is selective. It narrows a million vectors down to 10,000, and semantic search finds the best matches within those 10,000.
There's a failure mode worth calling out. If your metadata filter is too aggressive, you can filter out the correct result before semantic search ever runs. Imagine searching for the discussion about database indexing, and you filter to meetings from March 2025, but the actual discussion happened in late February. The correct vector gets eliminated in pre-filtering, and no amount of semantic similarity can bring it back.
This is the classic precision recall trade-off at the architectural level. A tight metadata filter gives high precision but low recall. A loose filter gives high recall but low precision. The art is designing metadata fields that are selective enough to be useful without being so narrow that they exclude valid matches.
There's a practical mitigation. Always include an unfiltered fallback query. Run your primary query with metadata filters, but also run a broader query with relaxed filters or no filters at all, and use the score distribution to detect cases where the filtered query might be missing something. If the unfiltered query returns a result with a similarity score of 0.95 that didn't appear in the filtered results, that's a signal your filter might be too tight.
That's a production-grade approach. Most people don't build that fallback, and then they wonder why their retrieval misses obvious results.
Let's talk about the third big architectural lever, when to partition by document type at the index or namespace level versus handling it purely through metadata.
My take is that document type as a namespace makes sense when retrieval patterns are different. Different embedding models, different typical query shapes, different ranking or re-ranking strategies. But if the retrieval pattern is search everything for semantic relevance, most of the time, document type as a metadata field is simpler and more flexible. I'd also add a third option that's under-discussed, document type as a metadata field with a dedicated filter index. Pinecone supports metadata indexing. You can specify which fields should be indexed for faster filtering. If you mark document type as an index field, filtering on it becomes essentially free from a performance standpoint.
That metadata indexing is important because, without it, filtering on a high cardinality metadata field can be slow. Pinecone has to scan the metadata for every vector that passes the pre-filter. If you've got 10 million vectors and you're filtering on an unindexed field, that scan can add meaningful latency. The general guidance is to index any metadata field you filter on in more than a trivial percentage of queries. Document type, date ranges, entity IDs. Fields you only filter on occasionally can be left unindexed.
Let's synthesize this into a decision framework. Layer 1, how many indexes? 1 per embedding dimension, with additional indexes only for hard latency, isolation, or compliance boundaries. Layer 2, how do you partition within an index? Use namespaces when retrieval patterns differ significantly or when you need logical multi-tenancy. Use metadata fields with indexing for everything else. Layer 3, what goes in the metadata schema? Per document type schemas with exactly the fields that matter for retrieval filtering, designed around the queries you actually expect to run, not around exhaustively describing the document.
Layer 4. How does this differ from SQL schema design, even though it borrows some of the same instincts? This was Daniel's explicit question. In SQL, you design the schema around the data structure, normalization, foreign keys, constraints. The schema is the truth, and queries navigate it. In vector database design, the schema is designed around the queries. You're not asking what is the true structure of this data. You're asking what structured filters will most effectively narrow the candidate set for the queries I expect to run.
A SQL schema is data-centric. A vector metadata schema is query-centric. And that flips a lot of instincts. In SQL, you never duplicate a field across tables. That's denormalization. It's a sin. In a vector database, you might absolutely duplicate a field across document type schemas because it's useful for filtering in both contexts. A project field might appear in both your meeting note schema and your code snippet schema. There's no foreign key relationship, no normalization, just pragmatic filtering.
The other big difference is that SQL schemas are rigid by design. Migrations are expensive. Vector metadata schemas are flexible by design. You can add a new metadata field to new vectors without touching existing ones, and queries can handle the presence or absence of a field gracefully. That flexibility is powerful, but it means you have to be disciplined. The database won't enforce consistency. Your ingestion pipeline has to.
This is where the upfront architectural thinking Daniel's advocating for becomes critical. The vector database gives you all the rope you need to hang yourself. You can start with no metadata, add some later, change field names halfway through, have inconsistent field types across vectors, and the system will happily accept all of it and return increasingly degraded results. The discipline has to come from your design, not from the database's constraints.
There's a parallel to the early days of NoSQL. MongoDB marketed itself as schemaless, and people took that to mean no schema design needed. What it actually meant was, the schema is enforced by your application, not by the database, so you'd better be intentional about it. Same thing with vector databases. The just dump it in advice is the vector equivalent of storing everything as untyped JSON blobs and hoping for the best.
Let's talk about a specific design pattern, namespace per entity for multi-tenant memory.
This is relevant for Daniel's use case, a personal AI memory layer where personal might mean multiple people or multiple contexts. If you're building memory for yourself, your spouse, and a shared family context, you don't want your queries about work meetings to return results from your spouse's personal journal.
The cleanest approach is a namespace per entity. you have a user underscore corn namespace, a user underscore Herman namespace, and a shared underscore family namespace. When a query comes in, it's scoped to the appropriate namespace based on who's asking and what context they're in. The vectors live in the same index, same pod, same billing, but the namespace boundary ensures personal data never bleeds across entities.
You can take this further. Within a user namespace, you might have subpartitioning by document type, but that's better handled through metadata than through sub-namespaces. Pinecone doesn't have hierarchical namespaces. They're flat. So trying to encode both entity and document type in namespace, names gets unwieldy fast. The alternative is separate indexes per entity, which is the nuclear option for isolation. If you're dealing with medical records, financial information, anything with legal separation requirements, separate indexes give you hard boundaries. But for most personal AI use cases, namespace isolation is sufficient and dramatically cheaper.
There's an operational consideration too. Backups, restores, index maintenance, these happen at the index level in Pinecone. If you have one index with 10 namespaces, a backup captures everything. If you have 10 indexes, you're managing 10 backup schedules, 10 restore procedures, 10 monitoring dashboards. The operational complexity scales with the number of indexes, not with the number of namespaces. And Pinecone's serverless offering changes some of this calculus. You're paying per read, write, and storage, so the cost argument for consolidating into fewer indexes becomes even stronger. But the latency isolation argument also shifts because serverless abstracts away the hardware, giving you less control over per-index performance characteristics.
Let's pull on a thread we mentioned earlier, the embedding model dimension constraint. If you're building a serious memory layer, should you be using different embedding models for different content types?
Almost certainly, yes. And this is where the index separation decision gets made for you. Code embeddings and natural language embeddings are different domains. Models like OpenAI's Text Embedding 3 Large are general purpose and handle both reasonably well, but specialized code embedding models consistently outperform general models on code retrieval tasks. If you're storing a lot of code, using a code-specific embedding model will give you better retrieval accuracy, but those embeddings will be in a different dimensional space.
You end up with at least two indexes, one for code embeddings, one for natural language embeddings, and then within each, you use namespaces and metadata for further partitioning. You also need a query time router that knows which index to hit based on the query type. If someone asks, "Show me how I implemented the authentication middleware," that's clearly a code query. Hit the code index. If they ask, "What did we discuss about authentication in the security review?" that's a meeting node query. Hit the natural language index. If the query is ambiguous, hit both and merge.
This is getting into retrieval, augmented generation pipeline design, which is a whole other episode. But the architectural decisions at the storage layer directly enable or constrain what your retrieval layer can do. If you dumped everything into a single index with no metadata, your retrieval layer has no levers to pull. If you designed your metadata schemas thoughtfully, your retrieval layer can do sophisticated hybrid queries that dramatically improve the quality of what gets fed into the generation step. And quality at the retrieval step is the single biggest lever for quality at the generation step. An LLM can only work with what you give it.
Let's land the plane with some practical takeaways. Someone listening is building a personal AI memory layer. They've got meeting transcripts, code snippets, personal notes, maybe emails. They've chosen Pinecone or something similar. What's their Monday morning checklist?
Step 1. Decide on your embedding models. If you're using one model for everything, you can use one index. If you need multiple models, you need multiple indexes. That decision is made for you. Step 2. Identify your entity boundaries. If multiple people or contexts will use this system, plan your namespace strategy. One per entity, with a shared namespace if needed. Step 3. Enumerate your document types, and for each one, list the 3 to 5 metadata fields that would most effectively narrow search results for the queries you expect. Not the fields that describe the document exhaustively. The fields that eliminate false positives. Step 4. Build your ingestion pipeline with per document, type chunking, and metadata extraction. Step 5. Index the metadata fields you'll filter on frequently.
Step 6, which everyone skips. Test your retrieval before you ingest millions of vectors. Take a representative sample of each document type, ingest them with your proposed schema, and run the queries you actually expect. Does the right document come back in the top three results? If not, your metadata schema needs work. Better to find that out with 1,000 vectors than with 10 million.
That testing step would catch 90% of the problems I see in production vector databases. People design a schema, ingest everything, and then discover 6 months later that their recall is terrible. By then, fixing it means re-indexing, which is expensive and slow.
This brings us back to Daniel's meta point. Vector databases reward upfront architectural thinking just like relational databases do. The schemaless framing is marketing, not reality. You can't just dump embeddings into a black box and expect magic. The shape you impose on the data, through indexes, namespaces, metadata schemas, and chunking strategies, determines whether your retrieval is precise or useless.
The difference is that in a relational database, the schema is enforced by the system, and bad schema design gives you slow queries or migration headaches. In a vector database, the schema is enforced by your discipline, and bad schema design gives you silently degraded results. You don't get an error message, you just get the wrong meeting note, the wrong code snippet, the wrong answer. The failure is invisible until you go looking for it.
Which is why conversations like this matter. Most of the vector database documentation tells you how to use the API. Very little of it tells you how to think about data architecture. Daniel's asking the right question.
The answer, in a sentence, is design your vector database schema around your queries, not around your data. Figure out what you're going to ask, then work backward to what metadata, what partitioning, and what index structure will make those queries return the right results. Same instinct as good SQL. Schema design, but applied to a fundamentally different retrieval paradigm.
One last thought. There's a temptation to assume that better models will solve this problem, that the next embedding model will be so good at semantic search that metadata filtering won't matter. I don't buy it. Semantic similarity is always going to be context blind. It doesn't know that you met the March meeting, not the February 1. It doesn't know that this code snippet is from your production repo, not your experimental one. That context has to come from structure. The models get better, but the need for architectural thinking doesn't go away.
Better embeddings raise the ceiling on what's possible, but the floor, the baseline retrieval quality, is determined by how you structure the data. And in a memory layer for personalized AI, where the cost of retrieving the wrong context is an AI giving you confidently wrong answers about your own life, that floor really matters.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, naturalists studying bats in the caves of Belize discovered that if you convert a bat's echolocation frequency into a unit humans can parse, a single hunting call compresses the acoustic information density of a full Beethoven symphony into roughly 1/200th of a second.
I have so many questions about how you convert bat calls to Beethoven.
I'm going to choose not to think about the unit conversion math on that one.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop, and thanks to DeepSeek V4 Pro for the script today. If you want more episodes like this one, and we've got 2,597 others waiting for you, head to myweirdprompts.com or find us on Spotify. We'll be back soon.
Take care, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.